Mark Rabinowitz is publisher of oilempire.us, a political map to connect the dots. He's been a writer, political activist, ecological campaigner, and permaculture practitioner for over three decades. He also has some insights into deep politics and deep events and how they have played out in the past. He joins us now to share his thoughts about exactly what happened last November. Thanks for joining us, Mark.
Thanks for the invite, and wish it was a happier occasion.
Now, Hillary Clinton had been backed by John Negroponte, Robert Kagan, George Herbert Walker Bush, and other neocons, generally recognized as being kind of aligned with Republicans. People associate them with that party. Yet we know the election machines can be rigged in favor of whichever desired candidate is out there. So why do you think Trump emerged victorious?
Well, there's a number of factors. Clearly, a lot more people voted for Trump than was expected by the powers that be. But it is worth remembering that if you consider minority voter suppression in some of the swing states, which reporter Greg Palast did great work to document, and you consider the faith-based voting machines we have in the United States and some states, that it is reasonable that the Clinton campaign actually won the election by a narrow margin. But beyond the technical details of election fraud, the real question is, why was the Trump campaign allowed to win by the deep state, given the heavy hitters who were backing the forces behind Clinton, some of them Democrats, some of them Republican? It is likely that the next 4 years is going to see the next economic contraction imposed by limits to growth and peak resource consumption. And Trump will both get the blame for whatever is going to happen, and it is likely he will be in place, or his cabinet will be in place, to impose the next wave of austerity and surveillance, repression, etc. This is going to happen whether we had Trump in office or Ralph Nader or anybody else, because in the United States, oil production is in decline. Fracking has peaked and has started its decline. Natural gas is similarly going into decline. And energy is the basis of any economy. As energy contracts, the economy will have to contract as well.
Now, I'm wondering about, because I've heard some beliefs that the ruling class itself is divided, and I'm wondering if, in your view, there's a this is one area where there is a consensus, because there's widespread belief that the war on terrorism was fundamentally an energy war. What is your understanding of how the different factions are choosing to address peak oil and gas and peak energy? Was that a factor in this election, you think?
Well, on the surface level, their response is just to deny everything in public. Look at the ridicule that's heaped on anybody who suggests the reason for the invasion of Iraq had anything to do with the oily stuff coming out of the ground, which, of course, is obvious. If it was about olive oil, we certainly would not have invaded. But more seriously, the deep state is not in complete alignment with itself over how to manage the situation. You have the what used to be called the Rockefeller Republicans or the realists backing Obama, backing Clinton. They would like a managed collapse. They're not quite as blatantly fascist as some of the forces behind, say, Dick Cheney or Donald Trump now. There's disagreements, for example, over whether to invade Iran. Cheney and Rumsfeld, a decade ago, wanted to attack Iran. And parts of the deep state, in particular parts of the military, did not want to invade Iran, not out of pacifism or humanity, but Iran is a military power that could disrupt oil flowing out of the Persian Gulf. And excuse me. And if that ever happened, that would escalate the crisis in unpredictable ways. If that ever happened, the consequences could be extremely dire. And so Cheney and Rumsfeld were blocked from attacking Iran. It's another example where presidents can be thwarted from implementing their goals by the deep state, by the intelligence agencies and the military. And with the attacks that the Trump team is doing on these agencies, he is possibly going to wind up being the latest president undermined by the agencies that supposedly are under his command. We shall see. Maybe we can check back in a year or two and see if the CIA manages to undermine Trump or the reverse.
When you look at the composition of Trump's cabinet, what do you see there that informs your understanding of the way this administration will confront looming financial and environmental crises?
Well, the most blatant is appointing the CEO of ExxonMobil to be the new Secretary of State to direct America's foreign policy. This guy has plenty of experience going all over the world scouring for more oil supplies, but a diplomat he is not. You also have people tied to the Blackwater mercenary company. You have extreme military intelligence advisors like Michael Flynn. You have a guy nicknamed Mad Dog who's going to take over the Pentagon, who was involved in war crimes in Iraq and Afghanistan. This is, to call it alarming is an understatement. But these are not just crazy people. They're crazy people who understand that we are entering the downslope of energy supplies, and it's a mad scramble all over the globe to grab what's left.
Now, in the past, we've seen presidents JFK and Nixon and Jimmy Carter seemingly at cross purposes with the CIA, the deep state, and they didn't last very long. So I'm wondering, now we're seeing Trump apparently picking fights with the U.S. intelligence, people in U.S. intelligence and vice versa. So what do you make of that? Are we looking at an early termination for this president?
It's possible. It seems likely. But there's so many variables, it's hard to know precisely. I'm reminded of the term from the Cold War, Kremlinology, where the U.S. intelligence agencies tried to study what was going on in the Soviet Union to figure out what the different factions in their government were doing. Because it was so opaque, they didn't have press conferences or publicly disclose their decision-making processes. And for the deep state, the national security states of America, we may need a similar approach to understand what's going on in Washington. I live near a mountain range, and it's rainy and cloudy here today. So if you look at the ridge, you can tell there's a mountain range out there, but you can't sketch it completely. And with the deep state, it's a similar situation. You can see the shadow forces on the horizon, but to precisely describe what is going on between the Trump cabinet and the intelligence agencies is in the shadows. You can see echoes of it, and they're astonishing to watch on the sideline, but what's really going on behind the scenes precisely is not something that we are privy to.
So, again, I mean, I guess I'm putting you in a bit of a speculative corner here, but what would you anticipate, I mean, if we're looking at a very dire or catastrophic situation, could we be looking at false flags or something like that that could further enable these, you know, a deep state agenda?
Well, Trump comes into office as the least popular president in U.S. history, and that's partly a reflection of the fact he didn't actually win. When George W. Bush was president in his first year, His popularity also slipped. He also did not actually win. They had to steal the election in Florida and other places. And when September 11 happened, which they knew was coming and let happen, Bush's popularity went from the 40% to 90% overnight. That boost didn't last, but it saved his presidency, as we all know. Will something similar happen with Trump? Certainly hope not. But given the epidemic of alienated young men who are committing random shooting events, which are not false flags, but just a reflection of social breakdown, there's clearly going to be more violence. Whether we'll have another 9/11 or not, who knows? But general chaos and mayhem that Trump will try to seize on, that seems certain.
Okay. And just before we close, looking at the wider public, what would have to come together for the public to be able to withstand what's coming? I assume you're not a huge backer of some of these rallies that are taking place, the marches and whatnot. Well, what would be maybe a practical strategy for perhaps capitalizing on the Trump presidency, if that's a possibility?
Well, we have to chip through the frozen layer of denial that is over all of these problems. We need to have honest discussions about election fraud. We need to have clarity about limits to growth as an underlying factor in the economic crisis. We have to recognize that what Trump is trying to do is capitalize on dissatisfaction and promoting what I call peak blame. And we also have to recognize that some of the narratives about what's going on are intentionally misleading, and that happens from the left and the right and other layers. There's a whole cottage industry of the conspiracy industry that's now been outed as tools of the government. When you have Alex Jones's InfoWars openly working for the Trump administration, disinformation has been weaponized as a tool of control. Perhaps the strongest antidote, apart from seeing beyond binary modes of thinking, that there's either a Clinton or a Trump and you have to support one or the other when neither is acceptable, is we're going to have to look at practical ways to relocalize as the global energy system breaks down. The more that we can focus on practical logistics instead of partisan politics, the likelier a practical, positive future will be for all of us.
Mark Rabinowitz, I really appreciate having you on the show. Thank you so much for sharing with us.
Thank you again.
We've been speaking with Mark Rabinowitz, writer, political activist, ecological campaigner, and permaculture practitioner, and he's also the publisher of oilempire.us.
You've been listening to the Global Research News Hour. You can listen to our programs every week on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg and on partnering radio stations across Canada and the United States. You can also download each episode from the website globalresearch.ca. To leave feedback on this program, email globalresearchnewshour@gmail.com. That's it for this week's program. Tune in next week for part two of this special look at Trump and the Deep State. I'm series host, creator, and producer Michael Welch. Bye for now.